Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our minds for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now on with the show. Welcome to Roguecast number 188. The recorded late at night in the... It's Roguecast After Dark.
We haven't experienced this feeling in quite some time. But was we
when this baby hits 188?
We used to record our Comics Fans podcast late at night. We've never done this for Roguecast.
That's strange. Back a ways.
It's dark out while we're recording this, and I'm scared.
It's cooler, which is fantastic.
It's a little chilly for me.
The reason we're recording right now is because we are about, as we speak, an hour and a half out from our Watchmen Doomsday Clock midnight release.
Yep. And if you hear this and you didn't show up for it, retroactively go back in time and go ahead and come on in for it.
That's a good idea. If you don't have a time machine, you can probably still come in and buy some Doomsday Clock.
I mean,
today.
The Cosmic Treadmill is always sitting around. Just use it.
That's
it's
true.
Fine.
It's a good point.
You know, you say that we'll probably have some Doomsday Clock. It could go fast.
We're not sure. It is. We got a lot, but there's been a lot of hype for this, and we're definitely gonna talk about it later in the podcast.
Yes.
Before
but it's
we get
like
to
people
that,
like what is it, like not quite maybe a third, but like of our very large order was reserved.
Oh yeah,
so
yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
So before we get to that, last week we did not podcast because Teela was out, so we never able to cover the register.
Thanks, Teela.
Technically, I guess we did, but I was too dumb to schedule anyone, so we did not cover this week's comics. So we're going to cheat a few of last week's comics into the picks, and there's going to be a fairly big segment of news, which we're going to get to.
Yes.
Before we get to the news, one quick store thing. Black Friday is this Friday. I don't know if you guys know, Black Friday is kind of a big deal for small businesses.
Yep.
So we would sure appreciate you coming out. And in return, you will get to take advantage of our, I don't know, 5th, 6th, 7th annual Black Friday sale.
Yeah, it's been going longer than that, I think.
That you come in, every $25 you spend, you get a $5 gift certificate. You can use as early as the next day, or you can give them away to somebody else, and then you've already bought a Christmas present.
That's true.
Or a holiday present, if you do other holidays.
I mean, the more you spend, the bigger the gift certificate you're going to get to spend on yourself.
And if you do give it away, I remember reading studies years ago that actually the things people like getting most are like gift cards and stuff like that.
People love gift cards.
Because then they get to go and shop for their own cool thing.
I love gift cards myself.
Yes, if you would like to get us some gift cards, that's really what we're saying.
Wow, yeah. Dave.
I turned it around.
But probably don't get us gift cards in the store. all right, let's hit the news because there's been a ton of it in the past couple weeks. Start with a couple of teasers. There was a teaser for Deadpool 2. You guys know I'm the biggest Deadpool fan in the world.
Yeah. As you know, I am the least biggest Deadpool fan in the world, so much so that I've still never seen Deadpool. And I posted the trailer for the second one because I thought it was pretty funny.
You've probably seen it in your sleep. I've snuck it into your room and just pressed play.
Son of a...
Damn it, Dave. Does that mean I'm a bigger Deadpool fan than you are?
You're hardcore compared to me.
I actually am a bigger Deadpool fan because I own some Deadpool. I read the Joe Kelly run. I read the Gail Simone run.
I merely read the Gail Simone run.
Yep.
However, the Ryan Reynolds version of Deadpool is a little bit different.
It's pretty much perfect. It's exactly what you want from Deadpool.
And the teaser trailer is great. The Bob Ross riff is fantastic.
Bob Ross thing is really funny. The little teaser's good.
Yeah.
They didn't show Cable, really.
They showed a picture of him.
Yeah, but that's it.
That's it. Yeah.
Which is interesting. It's just a teaser, but...
Yeah. It was packed with gags, though.
Yeah.
Like, there was lots of little asides, small things here and there.
We saw a glimpse of Domino and Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
I did not see Deadpool in the theater because it was Deadpool. I think I'm probably going to wind up seeing Deadpool 2 in the theater. This is what I've come to, Nick. Are you proud? Are you happy? Nick?
I am very happy.
Nick is like Ozymandias. He runs a long time. He runs the big games.
Well, does that mean Nick has a squid in his basement?
Yes. But it's a nice little squiddy.
Oh, yeah. And a bubastis? A hidden bubastis?
Yes. A hidden bubastis?
Crouching squid, hidden bubastis?
Yes.
There it is.
If you worked it enough.
So, also, teaser trailer for Incredibles 2.
Yes.
Which is largely about a baby with superpowers.
I mean, it's Jack-Jack.
It's Jack-Jack.
He's already gotten his own short being a dumb little baby.
But that's a flashback. This shows what happened afterwards.
Did you not like seeing Jack-Jack... Destroy Syndrome. That was.
Did he do that?
In the end of the first one, that's what happened.
He turns into a monster, and then he.
Don't they?
Turns
don't
into
they?
Fire.
Don't they? I guess I thought he was out of the picture until like the very, very last scene or something. Like
no, no, no. The last thing is about Syndrome kidnapping the baby to basically turn him into his sidekick, essentially.
Yep, it's messed up.
And then the baby turns into superpowers. Right, and he like Syndrome drops him.
He like cooks him.
And then Bob throws the car at the ship and blows it up.
Yeah.
Spoilers for Incredibles.
Yeah, I mean that's a couple decades ago. It's fine.
So anyway. Yeah, mostly this was a dad trying to be dad while his kid shot lasers from his eyes.
The laser thing killed me. The laser thing burning part of his hair killed me.
With it's fun to just see that character back again too.
So my question is this going to pick up basically right at the end of Incredibles 2?
It seems like it,
and that's great.
They did at the very end show a real quick series of snippets from the movie, like of other scenes. Did we see like any notable age differences? Like, are the kids? Were they even in it though?
I don't think they were.
No,
like Mr. Incredible and Ms. Incredible, they could have aged like 5 or 10 years and still be looking close enough.
But Jack's still a baby.
But and I guess that's presuming that that's the thing. Or are they going to show that at the beginning as a humorous thing and then they montage him into a team?
Who knows.
And then the other kids are, like, off in college or something like that.
I suspect it's going to be a direct follow-up to Incredibles, that they're not going to do the age.
I think I would rather see...
Is Bob Berg still doing it?
I believe so.
Okay. I would rather see 5 to 10 years later without a stupid baby in it.
Yeah, you just hate babies.
In the original Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, there's only, I think, one person actually killed in it, and it's a baby he just runs over while he's running down the street.
And that is your favorite story.
And that's my favorite story.
Is your favorite part of Battlestar Galactica when she kills the baby?
Yes, I actually did mention this to somebody the other day when I was talking and saying that the original miniseries is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
I was mentioning it to you.
Because there's, because when you watch the show, there's hardly any babies killed.
I don't know if you notice, not a lot of people ask me to babysit for them.
I mean, that's because you constantly bringing up killing babies.
Like,
that's sort of a natural deterrent.
Dave's, it's called Dave's Stupid Baby Babysitting Service. You want me to watch your stupid baby?
Don't look at your Yelp reviews. It's fine.
If you've ever seen The Jerk, there's a part where Steve Martin finds out about the heinous practice of cat juggling.
Yep.
And, like, I could do that with babies or whatever. All right. It's gotten weird.
It did it.
I'm going to move on.
All right.
You forced it upon us.
Yeah, I did. Okay. Y'all might know that I'm a fan of Tom Taylor.
Yeah.
We've talked about it. There's been a few Tom Taylor Tuesdays.
Yes.
He is the writer of Injustice 2 and All New Wolverine.
You might want him to write all of DC continuity.
I want him to write all of DC. Instead, he's got a new Marvel book, and the Marvel book is X-Men Red.
Yep. Now, there's a part of me that's like, what do I need another X-Men book for? Get out of here, Tom Taylor.
Me too.
Go home.
Me too.
But then I'm like, wait a minute. He's Tom Taylor.
Yep.
And he knows how to write stuff.
Yep. That's exactly right.
And Phoenix or Jean Grey is getting her team.
Yeah, it's a Jean Grey focus. She's the leader of the team. It's got Nightcrawler in it, but it's also got a bunch of new mutants, like the Wakandan mutant, who I don't really know and where he came from.
Yeah.
A new Indian mutant.
And then a guy who's not even really supposed to be a mutant.
Namor. I don't like Namor in the X-Men, but it's Tom Taylor.
Right.
And Mahmoud Azraz on art, I like him.
Yeah.
I think the character, the costumes look boring to me. But again, it's Tom Taylor.
Oh, I actually like the Jean Grey. It feels like a very much a riff on her 90s animated
series.
She's
got shoulder pads, so of course it does.
She does, yeah.
You know, Jean's an interesting character. She seems a little divisive. Some people love her, and I think, like to some degree, like fell in love with the character back in the 90s or and sometimes earlier incarnations. Some people find her very bland. I like Jean. I do feel like in some ways she hasn't had as much a chance to shine, probably because she's spent a decent, sometimes a decade or two dead. and that's a damper.
It'll happen.
On
her younger version is running around.
But I like Jean. And I like the idea of probably I think he's going to look for some stuff to make her more special.
I think Tom Taylor missed the mark. He should have just... our friend Cliff has suggested that they should just all have redheads.
I guess the all-redhead team? So like, who else would that be?
Wolfsbane?
Wolfsbane, Banshee, Siren...
Goblin Queen.
I'd read that book, to be honest.
Prestige.
X-Men Redheads?
Yeah, X-Men Redheads.
I mean, there are a lot of redheads in the X-Men.
There really are.
Well, it's a thing in comics in general.
Yeah, I think that's a...
MJ could get powers for a while and join him.
It's not the worst idea I've ever heard.
All right, let's make it happen, right, Tom.
Some TV news. Ellen Page is going to star in the Umbrella Academy adaptation for, I don't know, is it Amazon?
Amazon or Netflix?
I thought it was Netflix.
It's definitely one of those three.
Thank you, Dave. That was very helpful.
I mean, you know what else is unhelpful? I've never read Umbrella Academy, and it somehow never looked appealing to me, even though the art looks super pretty.
It is, in fact, a Netflix series based on the comic.
Netflix is my original guest. Is she playing, like, the violin girl?
It says tap for one of the leads. She will play Vanya, the black sheep, so yeah.
Yeah.
She has no supernatural abilities.
Is she a good fit for that, y'all? You who have read it?
Yes. She's a great fit, and I love Umbrella Academy, and I'm looking forward to Netflix adapting it.
Yes.
How would you briefly describe the tone of it?
Morrison-esque.
Okay, yeah.
Morrison-esque dysfunctional family.
Yeah, dysfunctional superhero family. Doom Patrol-ish.
Pretty art.
Oh, beautiful art.
Bigger news in TV is that there was these rumors about the Lord of the Rings TV show, and Amazon has nailed... There was a bidding war going on.
Yeah.
And Amazon won the bidding war by having a multi-season commitment. So, we don't know too much about this. It's going to be a prequel to Fellowship of the Ring, presumably post-Hobbit? Or is it before the Hobbit?
There's a whole second age before... Like, the first age, I guess, was like when Silmarillion stuff was happening, big epic god stuff, which at least at one point they could absolutely not do. It was not part of the same license. Sort of like X-Men being separate from Marvel, almost.
But now that's not the case, right?
I think so. I think Christopher Tolkien, the son of J.R.R. Tolkien, I think also stepped down from running the Tolkien estate and stuff. And I think that's a big part of why this is happening, because he was the guy who was like, hey, let's not get crazy with all the shitty Tolkien merchandise.
And all the other kids were like, hey, let's get crazy and make a lot of money.
Yeah. So that's going to happen. I'm a little bit nervous about that, but I do, Amazon knows kind of what they're doing.
Well, Amazon wants their Game of Thrones.
If they do that, the second age, I would actually prefer they do this and chart out mostly new territory, if they're going to do it.
But that means getting, like, Gandalf and all the elves.
And the elves will all be around, and I actually think that, like, say, Radagast, who they kind of did, almost became this sort of a comical, very Peter Jackson-y character in the Hobbit stuff.
You can definitely
They could rethink
him.
That and make him, like, a major character. Yeah. There's still one or two wizards who have never even been named. Like, Tolkien didn't even name them. That were major
it's like
wizards.
Red and blue wizard.
Yeah. Saruman would be a good guy in those days, or at least, at the very least, mostly good.
Yeah, you might could probably have him on sly, maybe every once in a while.
And you could, pickpocketing somebody.
Yeah, of course.
And also you would have, like, the Lord of the Nazgul, the person who would become him was, like, originally, like, an evil human who became known as, like, the Witch King of Angmar. And you could, there's all sorts of stuff that you could do with him. And aside from all the, like a few things that are set in plot, the Rangers would have been around.
Mm-hmm.
Aragorn would not be, but like, most of the other characters would not be. But, like, Hobbits would still be around and all that stuff. So I'm sort of hoping that's the route they'll go. Oh, and dragons. Dragons would still be around, too.
Interesting. Okay, so...
I think there's a lot of territory and, to mine and do, so...
I am, as you guys know, not the world's biggest Tolkien fan.
Yep.
And so I'm interested in this more from the perspective of what it means for TV.
Mm-hmm.
This had the biggest payment we've ever seen for rights. The rumor is about $250 million just for the rights before any kind of cost of doing episodes. But the budget's likely been another $100, $150 million. So it's a lot of money.
Yeah, they're going to, like, it's going to be incumbent upon them to make it good.
And here's the other funny thing that this was mentioned in this Deadline article. Amazon has not had the best of luck with the adaptations they're doing, because the three sort of big payouts they did was $80 million for a Woody Allen series, which is now, of course, a little controversial.
Right.
$70 million for Matt Weiner, the Mad Men guys show, the Romanoffs, which is controversial because of rumors about Matt Weiner, but also because it was the Weinstein Company. And then $160 million for David O. Russell's series, which has been axed after $40 million spent. And O. Russell is also, like, a notorious... So, like, they stepped into all of these, like, terrible abuser guys. So they're probably good to be, like, the only money-grubbing Tolkiens.
Yes.
But this is a big thing for them, because if they can nail their Game of Thrones, then they can be real players in streaming entertainment.
There's no talk of, like, who would showrun or...
This is just a money deal at this point.
What's interesting is that, like, Tolkien is, like... But I think almost anyone would agree, in some ways... drier than Game of Thrones, and it's very minimal.
It's drier than Tom Clancy.
Very minimal female characters.
Yeah.
You know, they had to work on that in The Hobbit, and to be fair, Peter Jackson's probably going to not be the most nuanced guy to do it.
But it's good that he did it.
Yeah, and I actually thought he did a decent job with...
Wasn't it Kate from Lost?
Yeah. The question is, like, you know, without kind of changing it up more, you know, in the same way that Peter Jackson did, how do you make it as viable? It would be too dry in a lot of ways, I think, if presented just straight from the books. I would like to see more, you know, concepts from the books, but I do think they have to, that, like, they need to build characters in a way that Tolkien does not.
Yeah, you have to tweak it.
And I do think that they can, that, you know, there are TV writers who are absolutely capable of doing that.
Yeah.
But it'll be an interesting test.
Randy, do you have a suggestion on just a random person who would be good at running a Tolkien-esque show?
No ideas. Benioff and Weiss are going to be free, right?
I think they might want to move on to something else.
Aren't they making their non-controversial slave show?
See, that's what I'm saying. They should quit that and go work for Amazon and run Lord of the Rings and make a ton of money.
Well, I actually want this to work for Amazon because a lot of their original programming I'm not into.
I believe Hulu and Netflix are kicking their butt.
The worst really case are. Scenario would be, I mean, if they did set it like post-Hobbit but before Lord of the Rings... And it was like young Aragorn and sort of like a schlocky, handsome-y thing. Although it did occur to me
that's the CW approach.
If you look at like sort of like some of those what are some of those British shows that are period pieces that I'm blanking on their names now. But the
Downton Abbey.
No. The kind of romantic but a little adventure-y.
Oh, like the one that Starz has, the...
Outlander?
Yeah, stuff like that.
That show is actually supposed to be really good.
And there's a few other ones that run on, like, PBS and stuff that I'm blanking on. But I could see them taking a bit of a slice from that. I just don't know how you make that a mega hit. Those are modest hits, or maybe big hits for, like, PBS and Starz.
Yeah.
I don't know if they can be big enough for Amazon.
Well, Tolkien's definitely got the audience, so they just need to...
But I also think people are like... They feel like they've got their fill in the movies. Maybe even got too much. So the show will have to prove that it can bring something that they haven't got.
Maybe this is the day for Tom Bombadil.
It could be. Maybe they find a way.
I have a pitch for you guys. Huh? Tom Bombadil and the Wacky Dwarfs.
no more Wacky Dwarfs.
Sort of like Sid and Marty Krofft kind of psychedelic.
All sock puppets. All one voice. I'm gonna
Gilbert
say
Godfrey's voice.
Gilbert Godfrey.
What are you hobbits doing around here?
All right, one last bit of TV news. There's been speculation. For now, we see the Disney shows will continue on Netflix or the Marvel shows. So.
Yep.
Despite the fact that Disney is setting up its own streaming service,
they're fairly happy with Netflix's platform.
Punisher, all that stuff, continuing on. I don't have anything to say about that.
Say that again. My mind was wandering towards our event.
The Marvel stuff is going to continue. So, Defenders, all that kind of stuff is going to remain on Netflix.
Are they going to continue making new ones?
See, that's the question. I didn't know if the article covered that.
Or is this really just saying they will, and Netflix will just be able to continue airing the reruns?
From what I understand, they're going to continue on making them.
Okay. It says that
if that's the case, then that's very big.
They're launching a new streaming platform in 2019. So there's probably no possibility of Netflix getting new Marvel shows in the future.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, like, when they complete their second seasons and things like that of some of their shows, like, that's going to be it for a while?
That sounds like... That's it. I mean, it sounds like the stuff going forward, like...
Seems like that actually could be good.
Jessica
like,
Jones, Luke Cage, Daredevil, those may all get their new seasons they already planned, but they may not be planning to do, like, a Punisher season 2 or anything like that. We don't really know.
Yeah.
But it sounds like they may be like, okay, wrap it up. You guys can keep the stuff you did already, but starting 2019, it'll all be ours.
Well, that's kind of sad, but...
A little bit, but it also means that they can kind of go out on a fairly high note, so, you know, mostly successes and no major failures, except for Iron Fist.
True.
For those who didn't hear, Dave muttered, except for Iron Fist, and he's right.
This is from the guy who has not watched that, or most of the ones that were good.
Movie news. James Franco's going to be the Multiple Man.
Yep.
That's weird as hell.
You know, people were very weirded out by it, but I thought about it, and it actually made a lot of sense to me.
Well, I mean, soon they're doing the Peter David version, right? Like the noir.
Yeah.
He uses all these different versions of himself.
Right. The way I was thinking about it was that superhero movies, you know, Marvel kind of has their own thing that they've staked out, but it does seem like they, even with like, say, looking at the Thor franchise, they tried to offer something, I think, new with every outing for Thor.
Yeah.
The first one was the kind of serious coming together, learning what's going on. The second one, they if nothing else, tried to do different type of action scenes, like the big teleportation action sequence in the ending with all the stuff going around. The third one, they like went 80s action, you know, like sword and sandals meets cosmic stuff, you know.
Yep.
And I feel like any given superhero movie at this point kind of has to find something new to bring to the table, whether it's an action scene, high concept or whatever. And nobody has, like, the notion of, like, this, of Multiple Man, otherwise kind of a Z-list character, maybe C-list at best, but one who's had some good writing behind him, who does, like, sometimes split into different dupes that represent different aspects of his personality, that have at times, like, gone astray enough to, like, build their own lives, right?
Yeah, one was, like, a preacher that, had, like, had his own family.
Yeah, like, you could actually, and James Franco kind of, like, has his, he can do his serious indie acting thing when he's not in, like, the stoner movies. And I could see him running with that and actually doing, you know, some dramatic interacting with himself on the screen.
Yeah. Yep.
You, in a weird way, you can have the character die without right. having to have the character die. Like, there's actually a lot of places they could go with it, and it would definitely be something that people were not like, oh, that old superhero movie. Are we presuming it to be kind of on its own, or would it be part of the X-verse?
We don't really know. There's a couple of interesting things.
Because I think it could actually work either way.
James Franco is co-writing along with Simon Kinberg of the X-Men movies, which speaks to possibly the X-Men movies being involved, and Alan Heinberg, who wrote the Wonder Woman movie.
Huh.
That's one interesting thing. The other thing that I think is weird is that James Franco is currently playing twins in The Deuce.
Yep.
And I'm wondering if James Franco... You know how James Franco's a weird dude?
Yeah.
I'm wondering if he got really high one night and decided he was only going to play characters that are multiple characters from now on. And, like, twins just start, and then Multiple Man is going to be him playing multiple versions of himself, and then he's going to play, like, an army of James Francos in his next movie.
Army of Francos?
The Army of Francos. Franco's army.
Wasn't the thing supposed to be that, hey, he was actually the straight-edge guy? He just palled around with all those stoner dudes?
I don't know. He's a weird guy.
Yeah. But he's a good actor. He's, a really good actor.
Yeah, he is.
Was he in 11-22-63?
Yes, he was. He was good in that.
Yeah, he was very good in that. Nick, did you ever finish or watch that?
I watched a couple episodes. I liked what I saw, but I never finished up.
It is kind of an odd call, but just not as odd as I think people think it is.
Yeah.
I agree.
Other big movie news is Rian Johnson, who is directing Last Jedi, which is coming out in a few weeks here, has been signed on to do a new Star Wars trilogy, apparently with, like, new characters, new setting, like... Basically a wholly new Star Wars trilogy. So they must have liked what he did.
Yeah. Hopefully we all will too.
Because if we don't, we're stuck with him.
Yeah. Has Rian Johnson done anything bad?
I always forget what his movies
Brick
are.
Brick is great.
Right.
Looper is really good. Has solid. Has made some issues.
At the very least, solid.
And then, of course, he's done some really notable episodes of TV.
Yeah. I think he's...
Oh, and Brothers Bloom is also fantastic.
He is... above average.
Rian Johnson has not let me down yet, but he's only done like 3 movies.
But can he write Wookiees?
But can he write Wookiees? We don't know.
Actually, direct Wookiees, I guess.
Yes.
But
no one can direct Wookiees.
He writes Korg. I don't know.
Idea, like, you know, the Star Wars universe has already kind of gotten to that place. Lucas took it to the place where it got kind of weirdly incestuous.
Yeah.
It kind of always comes back to Yoda hanging out with young Chewbacca during the Clone Wars. And I'm like, that, no, what? the everybody knew everybody, it's a small universe kind of thing. And so a trilogy that's kind of either set, whether it's set far in the past and like the, what's the, that's the Old Republic.
Yeah.
Whether it's set there or just in like the Outer Rim with completely different threats and new characters.
That's what I'm hoping for. We've always seen we've seen the Rebellion, we've seen the Empire. We haven't seen something that's like the shadow of the Empire, the sort of like the criminal underworld that exists alongside this.
I want a scum and villainy.
And I think that Rian Johnson could do sort of these. I mean, Rogue One was something like that, but it was still Rebellion.
Right.
Like, the sort of scrappy people living on the edge of this conflict That's the kind of thing he does well. Like, Brothers Blue is a con man movie. Brick is a noir movie. Looper is about the sort of criminals and time travel.
Yeah.
I think this is right in his wheelhouse.
Let's have a trilogy about bounty hunters.
That's also possible.
I mean, he could pull that off, I think. And I think if you got that, you would also be hitting their other smugglers and Jabba the Hutt crime bosses and stuff like that.
Yep.
I think I could be about that.
Yeah.
Speaking of Star Wars, you guys may know about Star Wars Imperial Assault, the board game that we carry.
Yeah.
Which has all the little miniatures, and it's like a little squad, and it's got the...
Yeah, you can put together teams of your favorite heroes to take on these missions.
Well, it's sort of based on the Mansions of Madness, Descent, all that kind of stuff, in that one player plays sort of the DM, and the other players play the heroes.
One guy runs all the bad dudes, other players individually control heroes.
Well, they just released a free app called Legends of the Alliance that is a planning app where you can put all the different things in, and do what Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition does, which is basically let an iPad run the bad guys, and everybody plays cooperatively against it.
That's cool.
It's really cool.
That was a game changer for Mansions of Madness.
Yeah.
And honestly, I could see that potentially making me want to play Imperial Assault, where otherwise it sounded a little bit too weighty.
Yeah, well, it also sounds like somebody's got to know the game really well.
Yeah.
This way you can all be playing against the computer.
Yep, that's cool. Yeah,
I think that's really cool. It's called Legends of the Alliance, and the app, I believe, is on the App Store now.
Wow.
So if anyone's going to get Imperial Assault for Christmas, keep that in mind.
Right. And if you want to gift your friendly local comic shop people after you've picked up a gift certificate for them.
Right. They can use that gift certificate to buy Imperial Assault from their own store.
Yes.
This has become a very self-serving podcast.
You sicken me, Randy.
I guess it is a marketing podcast anyway, so it's always been self-serving a little bit.
That's true.
Finally, we're close out with pretty big news. Axel Alonso is out as editor-in-chief of Marvel. We don't know why. We assume it's because of harassment, because that's when everybody's stepping down from things.
That's why I'm stepping down.
Oh. Is that why, finally?
Yeah. Weirdly, it was self-harassment.
Yeah, I know.
But they said I can't do that publicly.
Yeah, stop doing that. But C.B. Sobolski is taking over as editor, and you may or may not know who this guy is. He's been around at Marvel for a long, long time. Like, I met this guy back in the day.
Yeah.
He used to be one of their talent coordinators. He brought in a lot of people from, like, overseas, especially Japan. I believe Takeshi Miyazawa was his find. And he also, notably, is the guy who was the editor of Runaways.
Yep.
Which speaks to me of a guy who's going to be bringing in new talent, aiming at sort of a younger audience, and doing new stuff.
Did he oversee the Tsunami line in general?
He was big in the Tsunami line, yeah.
So, Do we also think is he somewhat more traditional? Axel Alonso, I always figured, was a more of a boundary pusher kind of guy.
I think he's traditional in terms of, like, he likes the characters, but I think probably he is not traditional in terms of, like, approaching talent and the what he's going to pitch for.
Right,
for
like stories. Just keeping around the guys who are consistent. He's going to want some new fresh blood,
right, and do some, you know, bring in new styles and new looks and new talent.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you look at broadly, the Tsunami line, I guess, was a failure, but it had interesting ideas that kind of helped push Marvel, were still part of what pushed them forward.
I mean, honestly, you could look at Tsunami as part of what led to Boom's Boombox line and that kind of thing. Like that is a spiritual heir to what was done at Tsunami.
And the kind of the more youthful things that they were doing, like sort of manga-influenced superheroes, some of their versions didn't quite work. They probably still show influence on Champions, Teen Titans, and other stuff like that. So, yeah, like, I think the influence was actually pretty large beyond just the success, cult success, but now more than cult success of Runaways.
Yeah, I agree.
It'll be interesting to see how things change. Marvel does seem to be at something of a crossroads right now. But what's interesting about this one is, like, I don't have a strong instinct for how they're going to change. So I think we could be in for some surprises.
I agree. I'm very excited about this.
I hope they bring back the Clive Barker comics, the Barkerverse.
I hope Sleepwalker finally gets his day. All right, that wraps news for us. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics, including Doomsday Clock. We are talking about comics for the week of November 22nd, 2017, and We are going to start with a pick that I think we all wound up liking, but is officially Dave's pick.
It's officially Dave's pick.
I mean, if I punched him and knocked him out, it could be my pick.
That would be very Watchmen-esque.
Yes, it would be, but I'm not going to do that.
Especially Watchmen the movie-esque. Yes. Slow motion and blood flying. Yeah.
Well, yeah, the punch I'm going to throw is going to move like a set, like, you know, really, really slow.
Okay.
It's going to land.
It's going to, this is going to work.
Get out of the way then.
This is going to work really well for the podcast.
You can't do that. It doesn't work.
So, you know, Doomsday Clock is probably going to be the biggest release of the year. Like, is there anything else that came out in 2017, this last year?
Also DC. Bigger? DC Metal. But yeah. I think this is bigger than Metal.
Yeah.
Right. And potentially. We'll see.
By the way, we might have to come up with a Nick is Right song, because Nick was telling us we underordered on this, and even though we ordered higher than literally anything else we've ordered this year, I think he may be right.
Higher than, like, the biggest Star Wars stuff?
Yeah. That was a couple years ago.
Okay.
When yeah, no.
Is that their peak?
Our top this year, our top number was definitely Doomsday Clock.
Yeah.
And I honestly, I mean, we all expected me to hate this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't.
Or you expect at least be indifferent to it.
Yeah. Or indifferent, yeah.
Yeah.
I am not. I liked it.
Yeah. Nick, you surmised correctly, too, I think, that this first issue would essentially be almost like just a 13th issue of Watchmen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is DC stuff in here. There is a glimpse of it. And are we doing spoilers for this?
Yeah, we should start off by saying we're going to do spoilers for Doomsday Clock.
Because I think there's some specifics to talk about. If you want to forward ahead, can we timestamp that later so they can find out where to jump in?
No.
Forward ahead and then just hit play randomly.
Jump ahead
You'll
like about
there.
10 minutes. Yeah. And if you see us, if you jump in and somebody's saying Rorschach, just keep going.
Keep going. Yep.
Or Ozymandias, or
giant right. Blue Dong.
It's Dongless, actually.
Yeah,
but they did have some.
Yeah, that's a spoiler. There's no Blue Dong in this.
But there is a snazzy cover.
There's a lenticular cover of Rorschach's face forming the DC symbols and stuff.
Which I can only imagine how happy Alan Moore is about that.
Yeah, you know, I think he really likes gimmick covers.
Wasn't it Alan Moore's birthday a couple days ago?
Happy birthday.
I kind of want DC to send this to him, just to see.
Why do people? He has brought so much joy to us.
Yeah, but he's been such a whiner about how awful comics are.
Who cares?
I care.
He didn't sexually harass anybody.
We don't know that.
He used magic. He might have.
At any rate, yes, that is the elephant in the room, of course, is that some people think this the existence of this book is a travesty because of Alan Moore. I can't get on board that.
It's generally not our customership.
Before Watchmen stuff was an atrocity.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I'm not even going to necessarily try and change somebody's mind. If they really are bothered by it, then they've kind of already made up their mind.
That's fine. Just don't be mad at other people for enjoying it.
Yeah.
I think that's
And I will say,
behavior.
We haven't hit that. Nobody's yelled at us in the store. Nobody's emailed us or anything. It's really just among our sort of hardcore comic
friends. We haven't looked out the window right now.
Right now. The thing I was going to say was this, that even at the time this came out, it did not come to pass, but Alan Moore had plans for essentially like Watchmen Stage 2 stuff.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
The RPG alone did come out with supplemental material that he had, like, based on his notes.
Yep.
I believe he had, like, even notions for continuing spin-off series and stuff like that. It's conceivable that that was something he, like, never took seriously, but, like, I read about, like, proposals and stuff.
Here's a random question. Have you looked at any of that, or the RPG material?
Yeah, I've got the RPG material.
Does this mirror any of that?
No.
Did John's take some of that idea?
No, because I think the one thing that he, I think, probably never intended to do was actually do stuff that was after Watchmen. I think all of his stuff was sort of side stories and other things from the history he created, which was decade spanning.
Right.
This is the first time anybody has been bold or crazy enough to do something that forwards the timeline and says what happened.
Yep.
And I guess the biggest and first and foremost thing is that the question it posed was like, will Rorschach's journal get out? Will it spoil the piece that was created by Ozymandias' crazy plan? And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. Badly.
But it does. Watchmen took place in 1986.
Yeah.
Or 85 or 86.
This opens up November 22nd, 1992. So the piece did last,
right,
you know, a couple years.
Yes. And it seems like Adrian Veidt, Ozymandias, the orchestrator of this, kind of rose to prominence.
He
never ran for political office, but...
But he definitely was prominent in sort of brokering deals and brokering peace in a lot of ways.
Right.
Yeah. But we open with the thing, it's like this crazy anarchy going on. The vice president has shot and killed the attorney general.
Yep.
Yeah.
And has taken hostages. The president is out golfing. There's a
collapse
all
of
kinds
the European
of,
Union.
Yeah, there's like a war going on. I think in China. And
Russia's invaded Poland.
There's all kinds of crazy stuff going on,
and it is very clearly, perhaps heavy-handedly, even mirroring the 1992, the unraveled 1992 of Watchmen, is clearly mirroring somewhat the worst case scenarios of 2017.
Yeah, very
our
much.
World.
Yep.
The president seems like a. It's the president is not still Robert Redford, right? Who
right.
I think was something that Alan Moore was doing somewhat cheekily in the first one,
yeah.
imagining a liberal-minded actor instead of a conservative-minded actor, which was Ronald Reagan,
right.
Taking the presidency.
But it also opens up on not only just mass chaos across the globe, but specifically mass chaos in front of like Veidt Industries, because he is sort of the...
There's a nation... He's disappeared... Everybody knows what he did, that he's responsible for the deaths of 3 million people in New York.
Yep.
And, like, so there's this giant manhunt for him. Nobody knows where he is.
Yep.
But you will within probably about 20 pages.
Uh-huh. Spoilers.
But then we kind of get a introduction to another favorite Watchmen character.
Yes.
And that is of Rorschach.
How can that be? Rorschach is dead, Nick.
Correct. There is something to that.
Yep.
Yep. And, you know, one thing that I considered, because I knew he was in this just having read the preview, was that, like, even though he was killed by Manhattan, just, like, literally, like, incinerated,
yep.
reduced to atoms, that it's possible that some part of, that, you know, some humanity or something left in Manhattan, that they might run with the notion that he didn't want that to happen, he still had some friendship from the past, and his subconscious would, like, reconstitute him, or something like that. That's not what happened, though.
No.
It is a different person, we know, because this person has dark skin.
Yep.
And,
I thought... But the dialogue is still reminiscent of Rorschach?
Yeah,
there is a change.
Has his patterns. And I did notice, I know that they probably made a font that's like a Rorschach journal font, because
yeah.
there's a lot of Rorschach's journal early on. Or it wasn't quite the same, though. It did have that same sort of brittle paper on.
Yeah.
But there was something different, and I don't know if it's just the translation to computer stuff, or if it's actually supposed to indicate that this person is just to give us the hint that this is a different person.
I think I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt that it's to sort of lean towards the second thing.
Yeah.
Because there is a difference.
So, we were trying to figure out, if this is a known character, there's not a lot of black people in Watchmen.
There's not a lot of possibilities.
Nick
had a really good theory, but I believe it's been annihilated.
No,
I don't think so.
It depends on how you view it.
It was the kid who was reading the pirate comic throughout the thing.
Yeah.
Now, this would add, like, what, 6 years onto that? He was probably, like, about... 14 or 15 at the time, maybe.
Yeah.
So he could be old enough, essentially, to be fighting crime. But although there's not necessarily a reason for him to emulate Rorschach, who was an extremist.
Correct.
Unless
the pirate comic really got to him.
Unless the pirate comic really got to him. It's messed up.
Because, damn, that book is weird.
He does appear to die in the New York attack,
yep.
Unless it's possible that his namesake, the newsstand owner, what was the shared name? Bernard. No.
I don't know.
I forget his
name. No, Bernard was the psychiatrist.
Yeah, I forget.
No, that's the name of the newsstand guy, Bernard.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll take your word.
He seemed to try and shield him at the very last instant. If somehow, we know that, like, not literally every single person in New York died. It is conceivable, if you wanted to say he might have survived.
It's true.
It didn't look like it in that, but you also didn't see his body.
Because there wasn't one.
The only other one that I could think of, the only other notable black character is the guy who was Rorschach's shrink, who did seem to be losing it somewhat at the time.
But he'd be so old in 92.
Right.
And this does not look like an older
man. Well, how
man.
Old was he supposed to be in the...
It's a little hard to tell with Gary Frank's art. That could be an older man's hand.
It's possible. It looks younger to me.
It's like, oh, let's see. That guy looked... He had gray hair,
yep.
but was probably in his 40s.
Yep.
So y'all seen Game of Thrones. There's some dudes who are like 70 who can fight right. in that show.
Well, anyone older than 46 is basically a dead man.
Randy says with a nudge, wink, wink.
So
if you just added 6 years onto that, put him in his 50s,
yeah.
you could still be fighting crime for sure. That's how Garth Ennis writes The Punisher.
It's true.
He actually has him like, it looks like in his 60s.
And that would make sense considering dealing with Rorschach.
He was sort of up close and personal. He wanted to help. He was having a lot of problems. He was breaking down because Rorschach's story was getting to him.
But if you spend time with Rorschach, you're probably going to go insane.
But he's also a guy who, like, I don't know if... Does he, like, use psychological tactics in this? The opening sequences is, in a weird way, a mirror of his own prison break
yeah.
in the original Watchmen.
True.
Not a literal mirror, but It involves him breaking somebody else out.
Yep.
But I don't feel like he's acting in any way like this psychiatrist. It doesn't mean it's not him, though.
Correct.
Anyway, I'm going to go and put that down as my guess as a possibility.
All right. I'm going to guess Dark Horse candidate is Black Lightning.
All right. So let's talk about who he's breaking out, because they're not known to us.
Well, yeah, they are.
Well, yes, they are, but they also aren't. They're not Watchmen characters we've met.
No, they are very clearly, though, the Harley Quinn and Joker of this world.
Yep.
The marionette and the mime. And by the way, the mime's gimmick of sort of, like, his weapons are, like, not real, they're mime.
Right. He demands, like, they need to go and get his weapons from the weapons locker.
And it's an empty locker.
And it's an empty locker, or so Rorschach thinks, but then he reaches in and acts as if he takes stuff.
Yeah. I thought that was great.
It was a cool scene.
Yep.
And then, like, throughout the whole thing where they're getting out, he's like, holding things as if he has guns. And we know he can fight, because he does, after taking a beating from some other prisoners, he does kick the shit out of them.
One of my favorite lines is Rorschach saying, "Don't point imaginary guns at me."
Yep.
Yeah, he definitely had the general speech patterns of Rorschach. Oh, and I just noticed the scene where the mime gets blood on his mouth, so he actually full-on gets the Joker grin there.
Yep.
There is a lot of little things in these panels. Oh, yeah. It is layered. It's like one of the... I mean, it's like the original Watchmen.
Yep. You're going to want to annotate this one or read the annotations that will get posted.
Do you guys think about Frank's use of the 9-panel grid?
I think it works.
I thought he did a good job.
Yeah, I thought so too, and I actually thought the storytelling was actually almost always very clear.
Mm-hmm.
I could see lots of people who would fumble this, and I think, but between he and Johns, they both of whom know their stuff, it did not happen.
He does cheat it several times. Like, he goes to 8 panels, and in fact, on one of the pages where he first shows Rorschach, it is one big panel and then 4 small panels. But
they
general,
did they did that in Watchmen.
Yeah, they did. They did. Yeah.
They did do that in the original.
In constant theme with Watchmen.
There is a sense of doom hanging over this, as much as Watchmen, if not in some ways more, because like the nukes are about to start flying.
Yeah, and there's no Manhattan to stop.
And like the news stations have all gone off the air, replaced by like a national news network.
Yep.
Which is seems like a creepy suspension of newscasting as well. It seems like that's about to start happening. And Rorschach and his friend want to try and bring back... Do they just say God?
They say God, but then he says we need to find John.
Yeah, they are trying... The one person who could stop it at this point is the one guy who we know was like apparently off gallivanting creating the new 52 universe.
Yep.
And they seem to think... he seems to think that for... I don't know why. Do they say why the mime and the marionette are the key to this?
They don't say.
Well, they say that the marionette is important. The mime was
her. She wouldn't leave without him.
Right, right. So essentially it's like they needed Watchmen Harley Quinn for some special reason.
And
other people
with their
don't
son
generally
too.
Have powers in this.
Yeah.
So only Manhattan... So I will say one thing Johns has done is something in this is which is you know the original had the intriguing mystery who killed the comedian who's killing Capes that's just how it starts out. This has an interesting thing. It's like how can a normal person get
effect.
In touch with God?
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know. Shortly thereafter, we in a sort of very symbolism pregnant approach to Night Owl's old base.
I thought that was great.
We find that the person who they were trying to Rorschach is meeting up with, his current partner, is not in fact Night Owl, who's kind of said to have retired.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of mystery around that too. Is Ozymandias?
Yep.
I almost don't want to reveal what he's carrying.
No. It's too good.
It's too good. we should leave some mysteries.
Yeah.
I
don't want to get too far. We're
you're right.
The whole thing. We've done our job.
Yeah.
It closes out with Superman, and it's the first shot we see of how the DC is going to interact with this. We don't know much yet. This is, as Nick guessed, a Watchmen epilogue in a lot of ways.
Right.
And also a prologue to Doomsday Clock. And it works really well. I want to particularly shout out to Gary Frank's art here.
Yeah, that's good.
Because I'm hit or miss with Gary Frank. And this year, by the way, Brad Anderson on colors. The colors are spectacular. Yeah.
Well, they posted initially those Ashcan pages were just black and white. They were just Gary Frank's artwork.
Yep.
And they were good. And seeing it in full color, it's It's amazing.
That's the thing I think is interesting, because Watchmen, this is Geoff Johns trying to live up to Alan Moore, and quite honestly, while it's good, that's a bar Geoff Johns is not capable of clearing.
Right.
But Geoff Johns can do good stories.
Sure. It's solid. But Geoff Johns cannot be Alan Moore.
Right.
He does a good job not embarrassing himself, which honestly I was not expecting.
Yeah.
But living up to what Dave Gibbons did, while Gibbons is a master of storytelling, his art isn't necessarily something where I'm like, it's unachievable by anyone else. And I actually think Gary Frank and Brad Anderson live up to the level of what Gibbons did.
Yep.
I think their art here is pretty spectacular.
I will also say, I think some of that credit is due Geoff Johns, who I suspect wrote a very tight script.
Yeah.
I think it's how you have to do these 9-panel grid ones. And so I do want to, give him some
There's
credit.
There's also some text pieces in the back. Do read them. They are chock full of information.
Yeah, they are. Just like
I would expect
one.
That this one, I could read this issue again in 10 minutes and I will find new things in it just right away.
There's some great stuff in the text pieces. I'm curious if they're going to continue to do this in every issue.
I bet they do. I
and
mean,
there's,
it's a Watchmen
tradition,
I'm sure. Yeah.
There's also, like, you could go in and zero in on Rorschach's mask and look for occasionally different meaningful transitions on there.
Yep.
So yes, to our surprise, we all kind of ended up liking it.
Yeah, it's actually really good.
It's got a good mystery going on. It's it does feel kind of like somewhat grimly relevant.
Yeah.
There's also a big mystery of how it will interact with the DC universe. What is it all going to mean?
Right. Well, that's the other thing. This runs all the way through next year.
Yeah.
So presumably there will be somewhere around the middle. This is going to interact with the DC universe in some big way.
Right.
But yeah, it's a fascinating.
And I do wonder if it like will things change for the DC universe when this is done.
I don't know.
I think they have to.
Will Watchmen permanently merge with it?
Oh man.
I think because of Manhattan's ability to screw with the DC universe and his need to meddle.
Yeah.
I think it's going to have to affect everything.
It will, but I kind of hope that Watchmen ultimately stays its own world, maybe one of the 52 worlds or however they do that.
Morrison mapped all of those out. There were a couple of worlds that
left
were
a couple blanks
that were had question marks. So,
so we shall see, though. But yes, a very promising start. Probably anybody who, if you don't loathe the idea in and of itself, you probably want to give this one a shot.
I agree.
All right. So we spent a lot of time on Doomsday Clock, and we got a midnight release to run. So we should kind of burn through what's left.
Yep. Let's fire away.
So I'm gonna just real quick do my picks, which is one from last week, one from this week. I want to mention Ninjak number one or Ninja K number one. Which Ninjak is like their British mercenary secret agent. I've always had a fondness for the character. And this one sort of gives him a new origin where it reveals he's sort of a legacy hero, that there was a Ninja A back in 1917 who was a British operative in World War I trained by an actual Japanese ninja. And I guess maybe he was... Was he from Japan? Yes, he was from Japan. And then he trained a British operative as Ninja B.
Yep.
And then the two of them were on opposite sides of the war in World War II. And then since then, there have been ninjas throughout the ages working for MI6.
Because of course there have.
They do little flashes through like 1957. They show, is it Ninja D? Yeah, it's Ninja D is sort of the old man who's sort of the running ninjack at MI6 now. He's like his buddy and he talks to him about his old missions and stuff. So Ninjak is a ninja, but he also has like explosive pellets, flamethrowers, gear, that kind of thing. And it is a James Bond meets superheroes, meets a bit of legacy hero stuff. It's by Christos Gage, who was one of the writers on the Daredevil series. Beautiful art by Tomas Giorello. This is a great first issue. Like, whether you've ever read the comic... You guys have never read Ninjak, right?
I've read a couple of issues here and there.
But you both enjoyed this, I think.
Yeah, very much.
I didn't get around to it.
Okay.
It felt like very much putting the Immortal Iron Fist into
Ninjak. That's the vibe I was getting.
Yeah.
And I've already noticed a few customers adding it, so it seems like the people who've been reading it, it's connecting with.
It's really good. I like the previous series they did, but this one in particular is much more approachable. And then this week my pick is X-Men Gold number 16, which starts the Negative Zone War, which has scary aliens coming to pick up the original member of the Brotherhood who was revealed early on to be a sort of alien mastermind, sort of a genocidal leader kind of dude. At the same time, they're revisiting the sort of bigoted Family Research Council book for mutants woman.
Right.
She has a showdown with Kitty on cable TV. Kitty and Colossus have a moment, which was really cool. And then aliens show up and ruin everything. I love how self-aware this book is. They make several references to... someone says, well, maybe the aliens are friendly, and Wolverine's like, yeah, because that happens all the time.
sort of supernatural style.
Yeah. It's really fun. It's got some great action. And just great character beats. And X-Men Gold continues to be the X-Men that I want it to be. And then, Nick, what do you got?
Just quickly, Superman Action Comics 992. This is sort of the fallout of the Oz effect after learning that Jor-El is still alive. Superman is sort of dealing with the ramifications of that and trying to disprove it in some ways. There is a cool appearance by a DC character that I will not name. Dave, don't ask. Damn it, Randy.
I wasn't going to. Does this mean, though, that his son now has a grandpa? Who might be a crazy grandpa?
Yes, that is that is accurate. but this is also dealing with some of the Doomsday Clock stuff too, because it's Oz was or Jor-El was saved by Manhattan, and for reasons we don't quite know just yet. So that's definitely going to feed into Doomsday Clock.
What I thought was interesting, just as a real quick aside about Doomsday Clock. I know they're going to want to package this in a trade paperback in the end and let it stand alone. So, I don't know all these side stories that have led to it, mm-hmm. and they haven't mattered to it.
Right.
No. And I think they probably won't in the bigger sense. Like, there won't be anything in Doomsday Clock that you need to get somewhere else.
Right.
But it is interesting that there will be stuff percolating elsewhere.
Yeah. But Juergens does a good job. There's some great moments with Clark and Lois and sort of their relationship and just sort of the true meaning of who Clark is. It was just a good issue. And then from last week, I wanted to throw out The Punisher 218, which is the first part of Legacy. And it's also the first issue where Frank gets the War Machine armor.
Yep.
And I thought that was a silly idea. Not as silly as making him Frankencastle. But it was a silly idea. But I felt like Matthew Rosenberg handled that silly idea in a way that felt very Frank Castle.
Well, he spends like half the issue as just Frank Castle doing his usual Punisher stuff, and then Nick Fury's like, hey, I got a problem. I'll give you access to the War Machine armor, and you go fix it for me.
Well, and I like the notion that S.H.I.E.L.D., while it's kind of disbanded, there are pockets of it still around because they don't want to leave their posts.
Right.
And Nick Fury is still around, even though this is Nick Fury Jr.
I like Renegade Nick Fury working with the Punisher. I liked it when Garth Ennis did it, too.
Yeah, so this hit a lot of really good classic Punisher beats.
Yeah.
And adding in this kind of layer of crazy worked.
Yeah.
If you're a Punisher fan, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, like I say, it reminds me of Ennis where he did that story where suddenly Punisher got involved in sort of this Renegade Russian nuke story. And I'm like, him being sort of an operative out there in the world in international operations is an interesting idea for him because it takes him out of his usual comfort zone. Giving him War Machine armor and having him take on, like, heavily armed S.H.I.E.L.D. renegades, it's not a bad idea. It's an interesting version to do for a little while.
It's a fairly terrifying
idea. I still
idea.
Wanted to see him activate it and just go right into a wall. That wasn't part of his regular military training, running an Iron Man suit.
It's true.
And Dave, you have a backup pick as well?
Yeah, I just want to mention the second issue of Sherlock Frankenstein and the Legion of Evil. This is Jeff Lemire's sister miniseries to Black Hammer, really awesome miniseries we talked up the other week, and that everybody who's been trying that out based on our recommendation seems to be really liking.
Yep.
It's about Lucy Weber, the daughter of Black Hammer, who is trying to track him down and is kind of going through the ranks of various villains, super villains, and in this one touches on one that is like just ridiculous on the surface of it. Cthulhu.
Yep.
Lou the plumber. Interestingly, because this is a series that pays homage to the kind of different ages of Marvel and DC style, we see that the original, like the Silver Age one, was actually a mad scientist who transformed himself.
Yep.
But then it became this kind of weird legacy. And what happens is one of those very Jeff Lemire human moments. She goes to interview the original, like, I guess, Cthulhu, who is now like a normal guy, like a retired plumber living with his kind of harpy-ish wife. Has a giant Cthulhu head, but is a normal guy otherwise. Kind of just sits living what looks like a lower middle class life and just trying to get by. And they have a really interesting conversation. Cthulhu explains how he never really wanted to get into the villain racket, and he doesn't want to, like, kill people, and that's why even when the dark voices in his head were telling him to, he would sort of do evil-type things but would never kill anybody. Yeah. And he ends up being a somewhat sympathetic character who also has a daughter who's a little Cthulhu-headed girl. Yeah. It is a weirdly kind of sweet little slice while also propelling the story forward. I'm generally just loving this kind of strange, skewed world based on Marvel and DC, but clearly its own thing that Jeff Lemire is creating.
A few things from this week and last week I want to mention. Fence Number One by Boombox, which is a story of a fencing academy. It's a young amateur who goes up against this really skilled other guy. And
goes in with all the best, like, you know, he's got the raw talent or whatever, and just it's completely schooled.
Yeah, and this seems to be sort of it's a straight-up fencing manga done as an American comic. There's even maybe a hint of a gay romance in there.
Yeah.
It's changing over a genre that we haven't seen in American comics, and does it pretty well.
Yeah, that's probably would have been one of my likely picks for last week. I thought it was very well done.
Then there's James Bond Solstice, which is a one-shot written and drawn by Ibrahim Mustafa, and it is about James Bond being contracted by M to protect a girl, a college-age girl, from a Russian operative. It's a great one-shot story with a nice reveal and beautiful artwork. I was actually really pleased with that. Last week and this week, I want to mention Donnie Cates comes over to Marvel, so he's got Doctor Strange number 381, which is Loki takes over as Sorcerer Supreme, and then Thanos number 13, which is just called Thanos Wins. And features, I believe, the Ghost Rider of 2099.
It looks like it.
Is that who that is?
Outrageous. It looks like it.
Alder Wolverine number 27 is more of Tom Taylor's The Orphans of X. Basically, everyone that any Wolverine has ever killed are now coming after all the Wolverines, which puts DeKen and Laura and Gabby on the same team, and is a really good action story. Rat Queens number 6, which is kind of a one-shot Rat Queen story. It includes a philosophical question about whether you'd rather be alone or have love so all-consuming. And in amidst that, there's a battle with hallucinogenic monsters because it's Rat Queens.
Battle with what?
Hallucinogenic monsters.
Oh.
And then Redneck number 7 starts a new story in Donnie Cates' image book. I also mentioned two hardcovers that came out this week. One is called The Doomster's Monolithic Pocket Alphabet by Theo Prasidis and Martin Donders. Not familiar with either of these guys. Basically, this is an ABC book. For example, R is for Riff, the only true religion. To reach divinity, doomsters are said to follow the smoke toward the Riff-filled land. This is basically a little alphabet thing that tells a story of psychedelic heavy metal magicians. And it's a weird little format. It works great, the art is great, and it sort of gives you this image of this world. If you're at all a metalhead, which I am not, you will still enjoy this. Even if only for N is for nuns, mostly naked ones. And then the other hardcover, equally ridiculous and sublime, is A Die Hard Christmas, which rewrites Die Hard as a rhyming Night Before Christmas-style tale. It is occasionally a little labored to make sure they get in lines like, now I have a machine gun, ho, ho, ho.
Yeah.
And to get all the little bits. But in general, it works really well and cracked me up. And I think if you're a Die Hard fan, you're probably going to want this.
Get it for the diehard fan in your life.
Yes, the diehard fan.
Yes.
Nick, what else you got?
Just a couple more. Imaginary Friends number 1 is the new horror book by
Imaginary
Fiends, you are correct.
Yep.
New book by Tim Seeley about sort of psychic aliens that latch on to the weak and kind of disillusioned. There's a cool FBI twist to it, and I don't know. It was a really good first issue. Then I've got just a couple more. Cable 151, which continues the love of all things 90, especially the Externals. And Demon Hell is Earth, which a new Etrigan series from DC. Actually thought it was a really good first issue and incorporates some obscure DC characters.
If people like the demon, though.
Yeah.
You should probably check it out.
Dave, you have anything to add?
Just a few others, and I haven't necessarily read all of these, but there's a Big Hero 6 comic, which continues the series.
It seems like it's an adaptation with some extra stuff added in.
Okay. Like the little character bio breakdowns.
Yep.
There's a Silver Sable one-shot, and there's a Betty and Veronica one shot or a series?
I think it's a mini series.
Yeah, that's right. Called Vixens, which I don't know what it's about, but they seem to be like a girl motorcycle gang in
sure.
it.
Sure. It's a new thing.
It's a new thing.
They can cross over the Gotham City Garage next year.
Yes.
All right. That wraps it up for us. We don't have any time to talk about Marvel, the stuff on Hulu, which we really want to talk about.
There's a lot of movies and stuff.
That'll have to be next week. So if you're hearing this now, hope you enjoyed the midnight release.
Yep.
And if you didn't, rush in and get that Doomsday Clock, which we all, against all odds, liked.
Yep.
And until next time,
Yo, Joe!
Oh, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.